Shakara Malik and Dabir Kash very humbly submitted that due to their abominable activities, they were now bound by the neck and hands and had been thrown into a ditch filled with abominable stool-like objects of material sense enjoyment. Let's repeat that together. The two brothers, Shakara Malik and Dabir Kash, very humbly submitted that due to their abominable activities, they were now bound by the neck and hands and had been thrown into a ditch filled with abominable stool-like objects of material sense enjoyment. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur has explained Kuvishaya Gartha as follows. Because of the activities of the senses, we become subjected to many sense gratificatory processes and are thus entangled by the laws of material nature. This entanglement is called Vishaya. When the sense gratificatory processes are executed by pious activity, they are called su-vishaya. The word su means good, and vishaya means sense objects. When the sense gratificatory activities are performed under sinful conditions, they are called ku-vishaya, bad sense enjoyment. In either case, either ku-vishaya or su-vishaya, these are material activities. As such, they are compared to stool. In other words, such things are to be avoided. To become free from Suvishaya and Kuvishaya, one must engage himself in the transcendental loving service of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The activities of devotional service are free from the contamination of material qualities. Therefore, to be free from the reactions of Suvishaya and Kuvishaya, one must take to Krishna consciousness. In that way, one will save himself from contamination. In this connection, Srila Narottam Das Thakur has sung Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda, Kevala Vishara Bhanda, Amrita Baliya Kevakai, Nana Joni Sadha Pere, Kadarya Bhakshana Kere, Tara Janma Adha Pateyaya. Suvishaya and Kuvishaya both fall under the category of Karma Kanda. There is another kanda, platform of activity, called jnana kanda, or philosophical speculation about the effects of kuvishaya and suvishaya, with the intention to find out the means of deliverance from material entanglement. On the platform of jnana kanda, one may give up the objects of kuvishaya and suvishaya, but that is not the perfection of life. Perfection is transcendental to both Jnanakanda and Karmakanda. It is on the platform of devotional service. If we do not take to devotional service in Krishna consciousness, we have to remain within this material world and endure the repetition of birth and death to the effects of due to the effects of Jnanakanda and Karmakanda. Therefore, Narottam Das Thakur says, Nana Joni Sadapere Kadarya Bhakshana Kere Tara Janma Adakpate Yaya. One travels throughout various species of life and eats all kinds of nonsense, thus he spoils his existence. A man in material existence and attached to Kuvishaya or Suvishaya is in the same position as that of a worm in stool. After all, whether it be moist or dry, stool is stool. Similarly, material activities may be either pious or impious, but because they are all material, they are compared to stool. Worms cannot get out of stool by their own endeavor. Similarly, those who are overly attached to material existence cannot get out of materialism and suddenly become Krishna conscious. Attachment is there, as explained by Prahlad Maharaj in the Srimad Bhagavatam 7:5:30. Matir na krishne paratak svatova mito bibhajeta griha vritanam andako bir vishitam tamisram punak punascharvita charvananam. Those who have made up their minds to remain in this material world and enjoy sense gratification cannot become Krishna conscious. Because of their attachment to material activity, they cannot attain liberation. Neither by the instructions of superior persons, nor by their own endeavor, nor by passing resolutions in big conferences. Sure, that's right there in the original Bhagavatam. Because their senses are uncontrolled, they gradually descend to the darkest regions of material existence to repeat the same process of birth and death in desirable or undesirable species of life. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tanami Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Vichayane Nivishe Sasani Vani Pashtachya Desatara Mukam Karati Vachalam Bhangam Vangaya Tegirin Yat Kripa Tvam Maham Vande Shri Guru Dina Dhamma Vansha Kalpatu Vyascha Kripa Sindhu Devacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Maha. The words and the vision of the pure devotees is quite amusing and astounding, and I would imagine quite shocking to persons who are not so much interested in hearing about the goal of human life, pure devotional service. They must be quite astounded to hear all this discussion about stool, soft and hard, and how Prabhupada kind of inserts in this translation of Prahlad Maharaj's words this little dig on big conferences. So the pure devotee is compared to a cutting instrument, very sharp, very strong, very heavy, because he cuts through the material stool. We have a colloquial expression for that, but anyway, the pure devotee cuts through that, and it appears to be merciless. It appears to be very hard. I'm reading these books about Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and you know, he's very strong in many, many places with many, many people. Prabhupada also could be very, very strong. And if you're not really sincerely wishing to know the truth, that strength can kind of knock you over. But the solution to being able to hear the strength of the pure devotee, the words of the pure devotee, is humility. And that humility, although in Western consideration, one who is humble or one who takes a subservient position, is considered to be someone who might not make it in life, someone who might struggle against the hard hand of material existence or against the hard hand of, you know, the need to get ahead, to make it in the material world. But in Vaishnav terminology and spiritual life, humility is the key that opens the door. It allows us to absorb and to hear and to not be offended, not be overwhelmed or disturbed by the words of the Vaishnav sages. The Vaishnav sages' words become welcome to the person who has humility. That's why when we read in the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the process of knowledge and whatever else there is ignorance, we find in the verse and also from Srila Prabhupada's purport that humility is the beginning. Without humility, you can't start the process. It allows you to enter into the hearing, to develop the Shraddha, to take the Sadhu Sangha. So here we see extreme humility in the behavior of Rupa and Sanatan Goswamis, who are approaching Lord Chaitanya for the first time. Actually, they snuck away in the middle of the night from their rather uncomfortable employment in the Muslim dynasty, and they snuck away to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and approached him with such humility. And we know, you know, having been able to fast forward through their lives via the Chaitanya Charitamrita and Srila Prabhupada's instructions, that Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami are are really the predecessor acharyas of our Hare Krishna movement. We hear in the pranam mantras of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and others that we're Rupanugas, right? We're Rupanugas, and the words of Srila Rupa Goswami and Srila Sanatana Goswami guide us like beacons in the night. And by following them, by following their example and their teaching, we become self-realized souls. That's how we can become self-realized souls. So we know that for someone to be true to Vaishnava Siddhanta, they have to walk their talk. Talk is cheap. Everybody does it. It's all over the place, in your face. But the ability to actually walk the path of Vaishnava Dharma, of spiritual life, is far more difficult. And so essential in being able to realize the purport of this Siddhanta or Bhaktivedanta, as you might want to call it. So in Bhagavad Gita, we see also that the first attempt of Arjuna was to tread the path of Karmakanda. When he started talking to Krishna, he offered him many karmakandic reasons why he shouldn't do what he should do, why he shouldn't fight in this particular instance. But on a more general sphere, we see that there was something to be done. It was somewhat unpleasant, somewhat difficult, somewhat trying, difficult to understand, difficult to accept, difficult to follow. But Arjuna presented Krishna initially with many karmakanda reasons why it just ain't a good idea. You know, and because, again, because of his humility, because of his ability to go to Krishna and say, you know, after presenting all his ideas and looking at things from many different angles, we can imagine, you know, he was in this very awkward situation in the middle of a battle, and he was expressing himself, and he was really genuinely trying to convince the Supreme Personality of Godhead of his point of view. I mean, it wasn't like he was just trying to be a smart aleck or, you know, get out of doing something that was not what he wanted to do. But really, he really truly believed that he had some really good arguments, some good reasons. They were Shastric reasons. They were reasons that were, you know, he didn't make them up in the morning. It wasn't just because he felt that way. But he really, you know, he had some good dharmic reasons why he shouldn't fight. And he presented them with all sincerity to Krishna, looking at Krishna in front of him and seeing that his arguments weren't getting him anywhere. You can imagine Krishna's face, you know, yeah, okay, what's the next one? Mm-hmm. What do you, now what else you got to say? Yeah, okay, mm-hmm. That was good, now what's next? But no indication that he was going to change his mind or that, you know, that something different was going to happen here. And just waiting for Arjuna to kind of come to the end, okay, is the list over now? Are you finished? And Arjuna, when he came to the end of that list, his position was humility. Right? His position was humility, that he was able to approach Krishna and say, okay, now I'm confused about duty. I don't know what to do. You know, I'm bewildered. And in this bewildered condition, what I'm going to do is I'm going to surrender. And I'm going to place my head at your feet and tell me what to do. Give me some instruction. And because of his humility, he was able to hear Krishna's rebuke, you know, and he said, you know, you're speaking like a smart person, but actually you're talking like you're acting like a fool. And he called him impudent also, not a very nice thing to say to Arjuna. Arjuna wasn't going to be very happy about hearing that. But because of his humility, he was able to hear, and he was able to accept, and he was able to go through the process of the Bhagavad Gita, walking up the stairs of Karmakanda, hearing about Gyan, hearing about Ashtanga Yoga, and then ultimately diving into pure bhakti and coming to the end of the road where you just surrender everything and just do what has to be done. Yesterday, Babru Prabhu was speaking about this trust circle. I mean, we used to do it all the time in my ashram where people get around in a circle and someone stands in the middle and falls. You think it sounds like it's no big deal, but actually it's very hard to fall. It's very, very difficult. If you try to fall, you'll break the fall almost automatically with your hands or your feet, because the nature of the conditioned soul is to think that they can deal with the thing, you know, that they've got it under control, that if it push comes to shove, I can handle it, you know. And the tendency, even instinctively, is to do that. That when we get in a situation where we feel helpless, we try to come up with something else, some other technology or some other philosophy or some other point of view that will save us from being helpless. Being helpless is a very uncomfortable position for the living entity. It really doesn't want to go there. But the devotee is willing to accept that helplessness in the presence of the Lord, willing to maintain that position of being not only helpless, but most helpless, not only fallen, but most fallen, seeing that there is no qualification. If you look inside me, you'll see there's nothing there, no good qualities. All that I'm made of is the mercy of Guru Maharaj or Krishna himself. So this is the position of the devotee, and this position allows him to absorb the transcendental message. Srila Prabhupada spends quite some time quoting his Guru Maharaj here in this purport, discussing this Kuvishaya and Suvishaya. And it's actually a very important point for us to understand with humility, because it's hard. It's hard to accept it. One of my friends is a preacher in India, and she gives lectures. She speaks in Hindi, and she speaks to many thousands of people sometimes. And she always tells me that in this present time, that previously we could say, okay, sense gratification was the enemy of bhakti. That we have like Hiranyakashipu, you know, gold and soft bed. And we can very easily say, well, I don't want a gold and I don't want a soft bed. But now there's a more subtle war, and the war is with dharma. And you say, well, how's that? You know, we're supposed to follow dharma. But there's a difference between dharma and Sanatan Dharma. And that's the difference between wet stool and dry stool, or this Kuvishaya, Suvishaya, that we wrap ourselves up in good things to do or right things to do that have nothing to do with what we really have to do, which is to go back to Godhead. And wearing that cloak that looks very regal and very auspicious, we feel somewhat protected by ritualistic activities offered in the Karmakanda section of the Vedas. And we build our lives around them. But the real essence, the real process of surrender to the Supreme Lord, of feeling helpless, of accepting helplessness, and of accepting instruction from the pure devotee with a humble state of mind, that isn't going on. Instead, we're hiding behind this framework of Suvishaya, of sense gratification with a little bit of polish. The Su means like auspicious or good. It's like a barrier between my real need to strip myself of all those pretenses and at the same time be open to the instruction of the pure devotee. So we hide ourselves. I've had a personal experience in my own life where someone in my family was involved with some Indian families, and here they are, you know, they're eating in McDonald's and doing all kinds of nonsense. But when it comes down to it, there's this Suvishaya, you know, come on, we're Brahmins, we're Pukka, we're, you know, you can't do this on this day and that on that day, and you have to fast this many hours and wear this on this hand, not on that hand, and you know, you're just a malecha. You don't know how to get from point A to point B without proper calculation, you know, the astrological situation and all this other stuff. And it goes on and on and on. And yet the lifestyle is completely devoid of any spiritual depth, of any import in terms of following or achieving the ultimate goal of life. Simply there's a veneer a thin veneer. You know, this veneer and woodwork, we have this thin layer of real stuff, or it looks real anyway. And then, you know, with the slightest provocation, it just peels off, and below it you see this stuff that isn't real at all. It disintegrates on contact with anything pure. So we have to be very careful that we ourselves don't become inclined to that, because there's a little bit of mentality sometimes creeps in, even in our own practices, our ISKCON movement and our own practices, that whatever comes from India or from the Vedas, it's really good stuff, you know, and it's to be bought and used and accepted. But then we tend to go down the wrong path, and we tend to misunderstand the ultimate goal of human life. And we accept, we get a little bit absorbed in Niyamagraha, where we kind of trap ourselves in these rules and regulations, but we forget the ultimate goal and what we need to do. And it's not to say that rules and regulations aren't good things, because they are. They're there to give us strength, to give us structure. But in order to be able to apply them properly, one has to have true spiritual intelligence and humility, the humility necessary to inquire, to hear from Hari Guru Vaishnava, and be able to absorb their instruction and their guidance in moving forward in our spiritual life. So this is a very, very essential element, so that we can traverse through the various obstacles. Because in the Vedic literature, there's something for everyone. And ultimately, it's meant to bring us to prema bhakti. But the path is long, and the path is also filled with many, many unseen dangers that can kind of knock us off the road for an indefinite period of time, that can cause us to go back in the cycle of samsara again and again and again and again. And almost inadvertently, we wind up on some other road going in the wrong direction, and after, you know, 30, 40 miles or 2, 3, 5, 10, 20 lifetimes, we might come again to the path of Krishna consciousness and the lotus feet of a pure devotee who can give us the instructions that we need to hear to go back to Godhead. So we have to really cultivate this ability, this humility, to be able to hear. And the mind may rebel, and the senses may rebel, and Maya Devi may offer so many other alternatives, but we have to be very determined to move forward. And that determination will only be supported by a humble attitude, by humility. And even though humility comes, it's difficult. It's difficult, and our first reactions may be very, very unhumble. Our first reactions may be almost violent. But if there's sincerity there, we have to reconsider. We have to constantly reevaluate and move ourselves along. You know, if you're traveling a straight line and you go off even a degree, at the beginning it only seems like a very small amount. But if you stay that way and you keep going, when you turn around and look back, you're going to be way away from the mark. You could be on the other side of the universe. So that you have to keep constantly checking in and correcting yourself. And the only way you'll correct yourself is if you have that humility. So that qualification is essential. We look at Judd Bharat, who was brought up, I believe, yesterday, and also Indradumna Maharaj. Indradumna Maharaj was speaking about something else, but yesterday it came up, I think you brought it up, right? You were talking about Judd Bharat somehow, no? Huh? Yes. So Judd Bharat, when we examine his story, we wonder how it is that he was such an advanced Vaishnava, and he left everything. Prabhupada said, like stool, he left everything. He left his family, he left his kingdom, he went off into the woods, and he wanted to just engage in devotional practice, but he became enamored by a deer. Right? So he became enamored by a deer. Why? What happened? And when you read, especially Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's discourse on this subject matter, his comment is that because he didn't take shelter of a spiritual master, and he left and he went by himself. He didn't have any sadhu sangha, and because he didn't have any guidance and he didn't have any sadhu sangha, one can assess from that there was a little bit of pride. because otherwise you don't do things without asking, and you don't take, you don't go by yourself. It's scary to go by yourself. Even Bhaktisiddhanta never went by himself, never traveled by himself, always went with somebody. So Jad Bharat, he went off into the woods by himself without asking if it was the best thing to do, and the result was, whoops, he fell down. And he got enamored. His compassionate nature, which is the Kshatriya, the true protector of society, has a very compassionate nature. And when he saw that little deer, and it was left without parents, and it was just, he felt compassion for that living entity. And so he started to help that living entity, but subtly, very subtly, little by little, incrementally, off a cliff, remembering a deer. And when he finally passed through the deer life and came to the life of Jad Bharat, he was determined. He was determined. And you can see, you know, that he set himself up in such a way that nothing was going to distract him. Even his family was a Brahminical family. They were trying to train him in this Suvishaya. They were trying to teach him how to do everything really nicely, pakka. But he couldn't do anything. He wouldn't do anything. He didn't want to be distracted. But then when he came in contact with Rahugana, that compassionate nature came forward, and he couldn't control himself. He had to speak. He had to say to him, who do you think you are? You know, I used to be a king too. I was just as proud as you were, and now look where I'm at. And what's going to happen to you? Who do you think you are? So we have this path to traverse. It's not an easy path to traverse. It's very difficult. Actually, when we read in the Bhagavatam, we hear the stories of Sanatana, Rupa Goswamis, and all the wonderful devotees in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. The times, they have a changed, and the times, they are a changing. And the atmosphere that we find ourselves in is very hostile to the practice of devotional service. And we are very unqualified, or at least I can say for myself that I am very unqualified to practice devotional service. My, you know, if you look at my gotra, you will find no good birth. If you look at my bloodline, it's not even anything. It's an embarrassment. If you look at what I would have done if I hadn't come in contact with Srila Prabhupada, it's traumatizing. Many years ago, we did a blind uncle band presentation, and it was about different religious or quasi-religious pitfalls in spiritual life, and I played an old Jewish grandmother, the wife of one very famous rabbi, Rabbi Kitchener, who came up with the philosophy of why bad things happen to good people. And so I was dressed in a funny way, and I was singing a song. And Pushkar Prabhu's mother was in the audience, and after she came over to me and she said, "You look better that way." She said, "That would have been good. You should have stayed like that. It's very nice. I'm glad to see you." It was frightening. The thought that actually if I had gone the normal trajectory, that there I would be, you know, with the big pearl earrings and the pearl necklace and, you know, black stacked shoes and a scheitel. So it's just, by the way, in Jewish Hasid tradition, women shave their head and they wear what's called a scheitel, which is some kind of head cover, actually a wig. So anyway, the point is that what will happen to us if we can't humbly listen to Srila Prabhupada, if we can't humbly follow the teachings of these great devotees? And so that humility is what saves us, even when our lower qualities kick in and we find ourselves like Bharat Maharaj did, in a compromised situation. If we just can keep that humility somewhere, that it can come forward, then we have the adhikar to actually hear from the pure devotee and make spiritual advancement and conquer over this samsara, this birth and death. The life is full of many, many challenges, and it's interesting how each of us look at others and we think, wow, no one understands the trouble I'm in. No one can empathize with the suffering that I have. And yet, when we really think about it, we understand that in many ways our suffering is minuscule, right? We're hearing about volcanoes and people being buried in mines for days and days and days, and people who are dying in so many different ways, every day, every minute, so many people dying in horrible ways. And yet somehow here we sit in Alachua 2010, and we have pretty much everything we need, and we think we're, you know, we feel still that we're suffering, we feel still the pangs of material things and the need for money and the need for car and the need for everything that we don't have. And, you know, so we're all being given exactly what we need in order to go back to Godhead. We're all very fortunate because we've taken advantage of that. Some people receive a book and they throw it in the trash can. And some people hear from the pure devotee and they don't even get involved. It doesn't register. But somehow or other, for those people who have come to the process of Krishna consciousness, that inspiration from within the heart, there's been a movement there. There's something going on that somehow we've been attracted. And we shouldn't take that lightly, because it's very rare that people are moved to take up the process of devotional service, to bring voluntarily austerity into their lives, to practice and to tolerate whatever is necessary to practice and tolerate in order to go back to Godhead. So if we can remain humble and take that to heart and keep it as the most precious thing, not become distracted by the desire for kuvishaya or suvishaya, understanding that all kinds of enjoyment, mental, physical, if they're material, if their center is not the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they will take us on a magical mystery tour. And where we will wind up, nobody knows. So, therefore, we have to keep that mentality. We have to keep being grateful. We have to keep thanking our lucky stars and the Supreme Lord and Srila Prabhupada and all the assembled devotees for the fact that somehow or other we've been able to begin this process. And hopefully we'll be able to finish this process. If not in this lifetime, then in, you know, however, when it is, but by Prabhupada's guidance and our sincere effort, the road to success is sure. Prabhupada said it was sure. So if we can pray for the humility to be able to hear from Hari Guru Vaishnava, Bhagavad Gita, then we can go back to Godhead in this life and not become distracted. Thank you very much. I'll stop there. Hare Krishna. If there's any question, I'll try to answer. The Kendra Babu, and then, yes.
I liked very much the point you made early on about how in the early part of Arjuna's discussion with Krishna, he presented argument after argument, and Krishna was hearing him patiently. And then he had to talk himself out. It's basically what you're saying, is that by the time he had finished revealing his mind, at that point, he was ready to hear from Krishna. And I maybe you'd like to speak something more about this or not, but I was thinking how important that is for anyone's spiritual development, that you have to trust whomever it is you're speaking with to talk yourself out, to get to that point where you have faith that the person can hear you, and then you're ready to receive something.
It's true. There has to be, and actually I have here, I didn't discuss, but I have here this idea that trust is not, there's a deep faith that has to be cultivated. It has to be cultivated by ourselves, and it has to be inspired by whoever it is that we're talking to, or who, Arjuna fortunately was able to do it in a few verses. that he was able to talk himself out in a few verses. Sometimes we have to talk ourselves out a lot longer than that. Or repeatedly, you know, that it comes up again and again. And actually, even for Arjuna, if you look at the battle and what ensued after that, he did have to kind of get a refresher course as the battle ensued, because occasionally he again got this kind of, well, I don't want to fight with Bhishma. You know, he did feel again and again this kind of... So we have to allow ourselves or have to become qualified to inspire faith in others and let them talk themselves out. And also we have to sometimes go through that process of getting it, you know, passing it all through and then realizing that we really, really don't have the solution. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. For many people and different faiths, pious activity is considered God's work, and it's even mentioned in their religious book.
Mm-hmm. It's in the 12th chapter.
So how to explain the difference between the devotional service and the pious?
Well, in the Bhagavad Gita also, Krishna says, if you can't do this, do this. If you can't do this, do this. If you can't do this, do this. I mean, he gives options, you know. That's why I said, and even Krishna says, that many people here, and out of many, many people, only one, Manushanam Sahasresu, right? Out of many, many thousands of people, one actually thinks, I should endeavor for perfection. And then out of that person, out of those persons, then only one will actually take to the path of pure devotional service. So, you know, we here, sitting here as a gathering of Vaishnav devotees of the Lord who are somehow connected with Srila Prabhupada's instructions, hearing about Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his pastimes, we're getting the highest level of devotional activity or devotional goal from all our acharyas and from these books. But when we speak to other people who are not so much ready for that, then we may have to guide them along the path from where they are to where they want to be. And pious activity is better than non-pious activity. It's better to do something according to the will of God, even if it's material, you know, helping people or giving in charity or being a nice guy and not breaking the Ten Commandments. It's better than not. But it's all useless if there isn't somewhere the desire to go back to Godhead. So you have these people who are spiritualists on some level, on some path, and somewhere in their psyche, in their formula, is the interest in pleasing God. And because they have that interest in pleasing God somewhere in the equation, then even they're engaged in pious activities that are in themselves not very useful. They will make advancement because they have that interest in pleasing God. So that little seed of the desire to know and please the Supreme Lord in whatever way is enough to propel that activity in the right direction. And Krishna himself says that. If you know, there's a progression, and like I said, the Vedas have something for everyone. And also the other scriptures, they fall into different categories of readiness for spiritual life. So everybody is where they are. And the duty of the Vaishnava is to offer them the highest. Not everybody will take. Even someone said to Prabhupada, you know, once in their enthusiasm, Srila Prabhupada will make the whole world Krishna conscious, and Prabhupada said, that's not possible. You know, not everybody will take to Sanatana Dharma. But my experience with many sincere religionists is when they think about the idea of making God happy, of actually serving the Supreme Lord according to his desire, it's very intriguing. They actually realize that, you know, going to God and saying, give me my daily bread, give me my whatever, is not as pleasing to him as going to him and saying, how can I make you happy? How can I serve you? So that's one way, one thought on it. Another thought on it is to expose people to the sweetness of the Supreme Lord. Because in most of those religious traditions, you have the greatness of the Supreme Lord, but you don't really have the sweetness of the Supreme Lord. And so to actually, that's one of the unique qualities of the Vaishnava tradition is to, because you remember that song, to know him is to love him? Yeah, so if you don't know him, it's hard to love him. And if you only know him in a very, you know, strict, austere, kind of regimented feature, then it's very difficult to love him. I have someone mining in the back. Then it's very difficult to love him. So to expose people to the loving sweetness of the Supreme Personality of God helps them to become inclined to serve him. And also to help them understand that some of these material pious activities, they ameliorate a situation for a very temporary period of time. And ultimately, you have to deal with your stuff at some point, so why not deal with it now? And instead, I may feed you today, but you're going to starve tomorrow. I can't feed you for the rest of your life. I'm not able. I mean, even on a material level, we say what, I don't want to say what they say, but they say, you know, something like, teach him how to whatever, instead of giving him something to eat, teach him how to get something to eat. So that even on the material level, there's some perception that, you know, this kind of stuff, it just plugs holes. If you really want to go the gamut, you've got to look at the highest goal. So we can give them some glimpse of that highest goal so that they can understand that these pious activities, although better than not pious activities, are not really the highest activity. And Prangavidna had his hand up, but Pushkara Prabhu had his hand up first.
I was just reminded that Prabhupada gave some heavy lectures about Golagraha. You know, we have this verse at Vishaya, Krishna's Vishaya Vigraha, you know. But the Gola Vigraha, Prabhupada said, if we don't take Krishna as our ultimate sense gratification or goal, then we'll be stuck as, we'll see Krishna as the Golagraha. Or like here he says, Golaya, the neck, the burden in the neck. And whatever Prabhupada is given, we'll be thinking, well, why our guru is given this? It's just we see everything as a burden and just trying to escape it.
I think with the burden comes also this concept of fanaticism. It's too strict, it's too heavy, it's too much. You know, really, we don't have to do it. We don't have to do it to that level. We could
also compromise. As far as you mentioned, heavy preaching, you know, I was just reading, and Prabhupada became very humble near the end. He was apologizing to his god brothers, and he said, he used this term, kuru niye prachar, which I thought was very funny, you know, typical Prabhupada. Kuru, I guess, is this pickaxe. You could hold one a pickaxe in one hand. Kuru niye prachar. Kuru niye prachar. That, you know, if you don't take it, we hack you, you know. Chopping. And he said, some of his god brothers would even turned against Bhakti Sundar Saraswati, and they fell down. They didn't accept his chopping technique.
Chopping technique. Yeah.
So this chopping is going on. You know, we may soften the chop, but it has to be there.
But it also has to be. Prabhupada was Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Prabhupada was preaching to people who thought they knew everything and in fact knew nothing. Here we have people who don't know anything, and they think they know everything, but they don't know anything about spiritual life at all. And so the chopping has to be done incrementally, because you're giving something to people who are totally in ignorance about spiritual life, for the most part. And therefore, even if you look at Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and Srila Prabhupada, when Srila Prabhupada was talking to so-called spiritualists, then he was very strong, very often he was very strong. And what to speak of people from India who professed to teach others, then he was like ballistic. But when he was speaking to people who were in ignorance and who were willing to notice that they were in ignorance, then he was very merciful and very compassionate and very gentle. And then again, there's that humility. When that humility is there, when it's visible, that thread of humility, even if it's just a thread of humility, Prabhupada would see that humility and he would immediately reciprocate with compassion. When there was any arrogance or some kind of, I know how to do it, or, you know, and especially if someone was leading people on the wrong path in the name of being advanced, then forget it. It was boom.
And you just reminded me of this one shloka, Matir Nikrishne Paratosodava. he quoted that along with the other two verses, Naishamati's Tavit, to John Lennon and Yoko Ono. And you know, they thought they knew about Bhagavad Gita. They were challenging. So although he was so praising that, you know, Yad Yara Charati Shrestha, you're the best of men and people will follow you. At the same time, when they acted like they knew something, he said, well, then, they said, well, there's so many Gitas, Swamiji, and they did know something, more than the average Joe. There's so many Gitas, why should we accept yours? He said, then you learn Sanskrit and study the commentaries and find out who knows the most. And then he quoted this. They said, well, you only chant Hare Krishna? No. And he chanted these verses, you know, which say you're chewing the chewed, you're a rascal, you're going to hell, Adanta Gobi, Abhijatanta Mishram. They didn't know what he was saying.
But Prabhupada knew that they were in a position of power in relation to other living entities on the planet at the time, and he used that. He used their place, of their position of strength, their sphere of influence, to bring people back to Krishna consciousness. That's why he didn't want them to... it was a delicate line, and Prabhupada was able to walk it.
Well, George Harrison, but John, it was a little different.
Both, really. I mean, in some ways. George, certainly more. But you have 2 minutes. Sorry, but 9 o'clock, we go.
But very nice. Thank you. Nice class. I appreciate it. It seems like you are developing tremendous amount of humility.
No, I have not.
But I was also fascinated with that verse that you quoted in 13th chapter.
Uh-huh.
That's one of the most important chapter, I believe. That's my perception. But this 8 to 12, the 5 sloka, gives 20 qualities. And I was searching one time, and I found every acharya loves this verse, some or other, not only Prabhupada, every acharya. And they gave the commentary, including Prabhupada, but there is just something very noticeable that I thought. Even though it starts with Amanittam, Adambittam, Ahimsa, Tejo, Arjavam, Acharya Poshanam Tejam. But the 11th number verse, there is a Mahisarvani Yogena Bhakti of Bevi Charini. This is the intrinsic of all 20. This is Prabhupada gives other 19s. He doesn't say 20, he said other 19s are follows this. So when somebody has a understanding to follow the order of Guru, then automatically humility will develop. I thought that was a very, very significant, because sometimes all those qualities are Sangha Siddha Bhakti, not really Swarup Siddha Bhakti, not really intrinsic of Bhakti. But they come automatically when somebody really obey and follow his Guru.
But you know the real thing about the word obey and the word follow?
Is human.
You can't do either one of them.
Yes,
yeah.
But that's like an identity.
Yeah.
That's like an identity. That I am always servant of my Guru. I have no opposition to the command of my Guru. That is humility. Mm-hmm. But that is in the service. So automatically comes. You are right. It automatically comes.
Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.